Hey folks, it's Sam here. Just want to quickly acknowledge that Andrew and I recorded this episode prior to Pope Francis's recent hospitalization. We understand that he was recently able to perform some masses. He stepped back into the public eye. We are relieved to hear that, and we continue to pray for his recovery and wish him all the best. And enjoy the episode.
Come, Holy Spirit, fall afresh on me. Fill me with your power. Satisfy my needs. Only you can make me whole. Give me strength to make me grow. Come, Holy Spirit, fall afresh on me.
We're back.
We're back. Oh, boy. I have here a book, Andrew.
A book.
It's by a guy you should know pretty well. Probably someone you're a pretty big fan of. Sam? Well, it's by a Catholic. It's Father James Martin, S.J. What does that mean? St. Jerome's?
If only we were so...
Society of Jesus.
Yeah, okay. Father James Martin is a famous or infamous Jesuit priest, which means he's part of the Society of Jesus.
Yeah. Well, aren't they all infamous, Jesuits?
Well, our current Holy Father, Pope Francis, is in fact a Jesuit.
Oh, nice.
First Jesuit Pope.
What took him so long? Well, they must not be a very good society.
The suspicion the church has. No, the Jesuits are very large, long history, mixed bag. And Father Martin is, let's say, engaging with the culture.
He is. That's a very diplomatic way to put it. All right. Well, this is a joke from his book, Between Heaven and Mirth. There's an easy dig in there about his whole ministry being a joke. Well, I'm not going to make that joke. No, I bought his book, so he must have something to say.
I didn't even get it right.
All right. Here's the joke.
What's the joke?
There's a barber in a small town. One day he's sitting in his shop and a man walks in wearing a pair of sandals and a long brown robe with a hood. The man, very thin and quite ascetic looking, sports a short beard. He sits down in the barber's chair. "Excuse me," says the barber. "I was wondering, why are you dressed like that?" "Well," says the man, "I'm a Franciscan friar. I'm here to help my brother Franciscans to start a soup kitchen." The barber says, "Oh, I love the Franciscans. I love the story of St. Francis of Assisi, who loved the animals so much. And I love the work you do for the poor, for peace, and for the environment. The Franciscans are wonderful. This haircut is free." And the Franciscan says, "Oh, no, no, no. We live simply, and we take a vow of poverty. But I do have enough money for the haircut. Please let me pay you." "Oh, no," says the barber. "I insist. This haircut is free." So the Franciscan gets his haircut, thanks the barber, gives him a blessing, and leaves. The next day, the barber comes to his shop and finds a surprise waiting for him. On the doorstep is a big wicker basket filled with beautiful wildflowers, along with a thank you note from the Franciscan. That same day, another man walks into the barber's shop wearing a long white robe and a leather belt tied around his waist. When he sits down in the chair, the barber asks, "Excuse me, but why are you dressed like that?" And the man says, "Well, I'm a Trappist monk. I'm in town to visit a doctor, and I thought I would love to come in for a haircut." The barber says, "Oh, I love the Trappists. I admire the way your lives are so contemplative and how you all pray for the rest of the world. This haircut is free." The Trappist monk says, "Oh, no. Even though we live simply, I have money for a haircut. Please let me pay you." "Oh, no," says the barber. "This haircut is free." So the Trappist gets his haircut, thanks him, gives him a blessing, and leaves. The next day, the barber comes to his shop, and on his doorstep, there's a surprise waiting for him, a big basket filled with delicious homemade cheeses and jams from the Trappist monastery, along with a thank you note from the monk. That same day, another man walks into the barber shop wearing a black suit and a clerical collar. After he sits down, the barber says, "Excuse me, but why are you dressed like that?" The man says, "I'm a Jesuit priest. I'm in town for a theology conference." And the barber says, "Oh, I love the Jesuits. My son went to a Jesuit high school, and my daughter went to a Jesuit college. I've even been to the retreat house that the Jesuits run in town. This haircut is free." And the Jesuit says, "Oh, no, I take a vow of poverty, but I have enough money for a haircut." The barber says, "Oh, no, this haircut is free." After the haircut, the Jesuit thanks him, gives him a blessing, and goes on his way. The next day, the barber comes to his shop, and on his doorstep there is a surprise waiting for him. 10 more Jesuits.
I didn't see it coming. Really? I didn't see it coming.
Good. That's good.
That was good. That was a little, yeah. It was a good punchline there.
Yeah. I mostly bought the book for the jokes, to be honest.
He's quite the comedian, Father Jim. Yeah. So, by the by, today we are drinking a velvety stout.
Yeah, but this is not alcoholic.
Not any velvety stout. Crap. How do you pronounce this, I guess?
It's just craft. It's one of those dumb ones where they take all the vowels out.
C-R-F-T.
This naming trend is like 10 years old. Like, there was a lot of bands that would name themselves, and they would just take the vowels out of their names.
Well, The Weeknd.
Yeah, Weeknd. I mean, yeah, just took some of the selective vowels.
I'm just amazed. Removal. We're recording this. I don't know when this is going to be released, but we're recording it during Lent, and you and I, as we mentioned before, are not drinking alcohol for Lent.
Do you feel better?
I do, actually.
I think I look better. Like, I think my face is like a little more defined.
Well, I might be compensating with baked goods. So but
fair enough.
I guess the one thing I'm amazed by is actually how much I like the taste and what the variety there is of non-alcoholic beers.
Yeah, it's really come a long way.
Like, you know, I just thought it was this kind of murky world of like, there'd be one or two beers and it would taste like crap and people would just have it because they had to or whatever, you know?
Right.
But now it's like there's all these different flavors to choose from and the packaging and everything. Like, it's just, it's at the grocery store. It's like going down and it's like, oh, okay, what do I want? And this is velvety stout. Tastes like...
Yeah. A lot of things are getting worse in the world, but this is one thing that's getting better.
Yeah, there's hope. There's hope. It's funny that you open up with our joke about the Jesuit, because, as I mentioned, Pope Francis, our current pope, is the first Jesuit pope.
Mm-hmm.
And he very recently just celebrated 10 years.
I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah. 2013. Do you remember where you were when Pope Francis was elected?
Oh, I would have been just getting ready to go to university, I guess, at a Catholic university.
Yeah. It was in March, I guess.
Yeah. I remember my grandma telling me about him. She was pretty excited.
I was coming back from a bus trip.
My Catholic grandma.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Yeah. I was with my youth group and we were coming back from it was like a March break mission trip we were doing in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were coming back and then it was like we're on the bus and this was like not a lot of people had cell phones people had cell phones, but like data and stuff like that. Like, I think there were like one or two people who had like data and we're out in the boonies, right? In Bruce County. So it was like somebody was getting updates, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the whole, you know, on the white smoke, you know? And then we got back to the church and then we like, I think we got crowded around a laptop or something just to like find out who it was. And I remember one of the girls who was on the trip was in like grade 8 or grade 9. Like, she was really young. And she was like, "I'm so excited to find out. I don't even know why. I'm just so excited." It was so odd. And even some of the older, like, adult leaders were like, "I don't get why it's, you know, for this person, you know?"
Yeah.
But looking back on it now, it's kind of like, yeah, I don't really remember Pope Benedict's election, even though that happened, I think, in 2005.
Yeah. So I guess there's been three popes in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Pope John Paul II.
Yeah.
For many years before we were born.
Yeah.
And then Pope Benedict. And now Pope Francis has been Pope longer than Pope Benedict was.
Right.
Which is kind of wild, too, to think. So 10 years. So obviously there's been like a ton of stuff written about in the last little while. I even went to a public lecture at St. Jerome's recently. Mm-hmm. That was they brought in a professor who's fairly well known.
Yeah,
Massimo Fagioli from Villanova in the States, and his whole talk was like, what has the last 10 years been in the church?
What did he conclude?
Well, he's quite positive about Pope Francis' papacy and kind of positive about the shift in tone, but also some pretty like concrete policy things.
Sure, right.
Policies around the Vatican, around transparency and finances, you know. Yeah, but it's hard. I always find like when you're in the States, you know, there's like a culture war going on, right?
Right.
And even people who are like trying to be above it and trying to be like critical of the culture war are like kind of part of, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, you know
they're
I mean?
Engaging. Yeah, yeah, totally.
So they're like, ah, those people on the other side that I don't like, they're in the culture war, you know?
Right.
And then
right.
they'll make a whole bunch of statements that you're like, oh, well, you're just the other side of that culture
totally.
War.
Yeah,
right? So I'm always a little skeptical of that. But I found this great article in National Post from Father Raymond D'Souza. Do you ever read Father Raymond D'Souza?
I don't think I do.
He's a regular columnist for the National Post and maybe a couple other papers. He's like kind of one of those priests that, like, if there's at least Canadian priests, that if there's like a big thing, like a pope mm-hmm. getting elected,
right,
he'll be the one
sure.
that they
the go-to religion
yeah,
writer,
right?
Yeah,
and they interview and you know, so but he's great. I've heard him speak actually before, and his article, the title of his article, Pope Francis hoped to convert the world, has the world converted the church?
Oh wow, wonder where he's going with that one.
And
any good bits?
Yeah, there was one in particular that I was let me just find it here. Oh yeah, we've talked before about the German bishops. Like here's one there. He's saying, days before his 10th anniversary, an assembly of the Catholic church in Germany, including a majority of the German bishops, voted by large majorities in favor of the world's menu for the church. Sexual liberalism, intercommunion, women's ordination, all served up with a side order of climate activism. Very little about Jesus Christ. So the whole tenor of it is not of the of the article is not totally down on Pope Francis. Let me see if I can find.
He really gets it from all sides, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, like there are people who think he's like he's sort of this mixed bag. If you were to think of it in like strictly political terms, right? If you think of him as just a politician,
yeah.
He's like very pro-life, very, you sure. know, but he's also into climate activism, you know, and in the sense of the care for creation, you
sure.
know, we're to be stewards of creation, right? So he's written a lot about that. At the same time, he's like, wants to build bridges and accompany people, even people that he may know are incorrect, but he's not going to state that. He's going to just focus on reaching out, on
right.
making friends, right?
Right.
Whereas people would say like, well, but like, are you going to call them out because they're wrong? You know, and
sure.
his idea as well. No, I'm not going to, or at least that's what it seemed. I guess by his actions,
he doesn't offer
right?
as many rebukes as
whereas,
his critics.
Yeah.
Want.
Whereas for people seeking like a lot of clarity, like what is it we think? How are we different from other religions? How are we different from, you know, political parties? So like Pope Francis, one of his major, what we call encyclicals, major letters, is Laudato Si. And that is his big kind of like manifesto on the climate, on the environment, on being steward of creation. And so I like this quote from, again, this article from Father D'Souza. He says, Pope Francis entitled the encyclical Laudato Si after the canticle of the creatures of his patron, St. Francis of Assisi. He opens with the quote from St. Francis, "Praise be to you, my Lord, through our sister Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us." All very traditional Catholic piety, but St. Francis also wrote in the same hymn, Praise be you, my Lord, through our sister bodily death, from whom no living being can escape. How dreadful for those who die in mortal sin. You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I guess he's sort of critiquing, like, sometimes you can have a tendency, one can have a tendency to cherry pick, you know, like, sure. What sounds nice, what's kind of popular today.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a criticism that's leveled at Pope Francis. Like, well, if we touch on talking about refugees or climate change or, you know, right. or the evils of capitalism, you know, we're going to win a lot of favor from the media or, you know, from whoever, from politicians.
Yeah.
But if we're actually going to talk about sin, about people's conversion, about life issues, we're going to we should stay away from that. That's sort of like the more conservative criticism of Francis.
Yeah, and now do you think like the people would have said the reverse about Benedict though? Like would people have said that Benedict I wasn't paying attention while Benedict was Pope at all, but like my reading on him is that he was probably the opposite of Francis in that regard and did not outreach enough and did not like seem to maybe and I think Benedict was a very smart theologian. Mm-hmm. Everything I've read mm-hmm. from him has seemed very well mm-hmm. reasoned. But like, did he just not have the welcoming tone at all that Francis seems to do really well?
Well, there would definitely be people like even now, like Pope Benedict passed away recently.
Mm-hmm.
And like there would definitely be people right now who would still say that sort of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. I think though, like, so if I've kind of laid out a little bit, the kind of the face of the criticism, like I think when you dig down into who these people are, like it's a little more telling. So Benedict, you're absolutely right, was much older than Pope Francis. Many people upon his death were saying like, this was one of the smartest men. This is in the high intellectual class in Europe, you know, of his
like,
generation.
People talked about him like he's like the Thomas Aquinas of his generation.
Like, yeah, for all intents and purposes, just a genius. German, you know, like he's a German man. He's part of that kind of European, you know, center of power of the church. I don't mean that in kind of a cynical way. I just mean like that's where the church was
geographically
for many years. Pope Francis comes out of Argentina, right? So he's got this South American experience, Jesuit in the sense of a little bit more missionary, maybe a bit more outreach, right?
Well, also South America would have also been very influenced by liberation theology.
Totally.
As well.
But I mean, like Benedict, his first, I got to find the name for like his first encyclical, leave it in the comments if you don't know. Seems like something folks would say. Like, it's kind of surprising. I actually find, like, if you watch something like The Two Popes, you know?
Yeah, great
which
movie.
Is, it's great. It's also mostly fictional.
Right,
you know,
course.
But it is a really good movie. But it's unfair in the sense that it really portrayed Benedict, like, completely out of touch with the world, which I really don't think he was. I think he was trying to do, because he was very close with Pope John Paul II. They were both like participants. Benedict wasn't a full participant in the Second Vatican Council, which was huge. It was a monumental shift for the church.
Yeah.
And in the years afterwards, the church and society with the sexual revolution, with all kinds of stuff, like it was kind of rocky waters. It was kind of turbulent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were really coming in to try to like just add some consistency, some clarity. Pope John Paul II, like politically, his engagements were try to defeat communism and, you know, but liturgically and theologically, it was like, all right, let's just get some. So they work on the Catechism of the Catholic Church that was published in the 90s, you know, just to get like some statements of fact. The
sure.
liturgy was kind of like there was been a bunch of experimentation and innovation in how Catholic Mass was done. It was like, okay, now let's kind of like settle in here. So Benedict's first encyclical, I found it here, was Deus Caritas Est, which God is love, you know?
Right.
It was a meditation on the love of God, you know? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't like some esoteric, you know, moral theology on, you know? Sure. So that's kind of my read of him is he was a little bit more surprising than people give him credit for.
Well, because I've read a post-mortem on Benedict, and I know we're trying to talk about Francis, but like I read something about him where they're basically saying for his time, for like when he was part of Vatican II and all that, like he would have been perceived as actually a more progressive theologian.
Definitely.
Like in the 60s, he was very progressive. But
well these were guys like John Paul II, Benedict, like they were definitely not what they call preconciliar before the council. They weren't people who wanted to stay in the old right, in the old, like they wanted the church to respond to the modern world. But again, it kind of goes back to the title of this article. It's like, do they want to shape the world or do they want to be shaped by the world, you know?
Yeah.
And it's always like, I don't know, it's always a healthy, maybe healthy is not even the right words. It's always a tough road to walk.
It is.
That's right. In the world, but not of the world.
Because like there's nothing wrong with a lot of things that change in response to the world that I think are generally okay. Are things related to superficial style or like the language that you use in terms of like how people are talking in that generation, or like even just like what are the issues that are causing people the most grief in their lives right now that our church needs to speak into more? Like there, it's really matters of like emphasis and style, I feel like, where like it's okay to an extent, but obviously like where people get concerned and probably get concerned with Francis, because I think sometimes he does have a tendency to obfuscate, is when it concerns matters of morality and truth and church teaching, which should not, in theory, be changing at all.
Yeah. And again, with style, like style can affect substance and vice versa. Like, for instance, one of the things Father D'Souza pointed out, he's like, they used to have papal bulls, you know, which was like the decrees from, which maybe that's outdated, antiquated, or that, you know, how that's done. We still have things like encyclicals and formal things. But like now, the press conference on the plane has become like a staple of Pope Francis's papacy, where it's like he'll have traveled somewhere, and then he'll hold a press conference on the plane. Like, he's literally just standing in the plane. There's a bunch of journalists.
Yeah.
And, like, on the one hand, it's like, oh, wow, cool, how approachable and how everything. But then that's often where it's just off-the-cuff remarks. And that's where things will get either mistranslated and or misquoted, because he'll be speaking in, you know, Italian or Spanish or whatever. And then you'll get like a little thing taken out of context, and we've got 24-hour news cycles. So like before his plane has landed, there'll be articles written either like saying, this is the most amazing thing, did you hear what the Pope has said? And on the flip side, like, he's a heretic, like, you know what I mean? So it's a totally different kind of world and landscape that he's operating in. And I think in his desire to like be part of it and to be relevant and on behalf of the church be relevant, it's murky, it's messy.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know. The other thing that a lot of people speculate on is because Pope Benedict retired before his death.
Right.
He was the first to do so in, I believe, like 600 years.
Yeah. I think Francis is going to do the same.
Well, there's speculation. And initially, like, he kept saying things like in his papacy, like, I'm not going to be pope for a long, long time. But now, recently, he said, like, no, I think it's a thing for life. But then, like,
he's in a lot worse shape these days. Like, he's in a wheelchair all the
basically
time.
Basically, in a wheelchair. Yeah, he's got sciatica. He's, like, I mean, missing part of his lung or something like that. Yeah, wow. Like, he has, you know. But even then, some people, it's so funny. Like, people interpret things. I try not to be very cynical, right? Mm-hmm. He's the Holy Father, he's the Pope, you know, he's the leader of my church, and, you know, I try to give him the benefit of the doubt and everything. But it is funny how people will, in our current era, interpret him like a politician or a celebrity or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
So even people, when he said like, no, like I'm sticking it out. And he mentions he had some line about like the moment a Pope announces they're retiring, there's all these pressures on them. And I couldn't help but think of like, you know, Justin Trudeau or Joe Biden or something. It's like, they're always running in the next election until they're not, right? Until they actually are like, no, I'm not in. Like anytime they're asked that question, they have to say like, do you intend to run the next election? It's like, yes, definitely. I'm proud of what we're doing and I want to continue. Because if they were to say no, then everyone would be like, oh,
sucks the wind out.
What are you going to do with your last month in office or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So there are some people who have like thought, oh, is he just saying that because he doesn't want people to put all this pressure on him to make different appointments or to, you know, whatever, to shake things up in his last remaining months.
Right.
So I don't know. I wouldn't actually be surprised if he did retire before he dies, moves back to Argentina. He's talked about that he might move back to Argentina, live a simple life. And I think the consensus is, even though there was great hope for like, you know, an African Pope or an Asian Pope as the next one, which would be groundbreaking, I think there may just be a desire for people to want a stabilizing figure.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering about that. Cause like, where do you think the church goes after Francis? Like, I just feel like Francis seems like it was a big departure from Benedict, but I also think like I've said before, I don't think Francis's strengths are giving the church clarity. I think he's been very good at opening doors and changing people's perception of the church. And I don't know, just like, which is good to a point, but I do think that just looking around at other denominations, looking around at just the confusing state the world is in right now and how rapidly everything is changing, like, I feel like the church needs a departure somewhat from Francis whenever he does either step down or pass on. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think it will really be about like taking the best lessons and the best, like, yeah, the best things that he's emphasized. Mm-hmm. And like, who am I to say, right? Like, I'm not, this is just my judgment, you know, other people take it where it is, but like, take it for what it is. But I think it'll be about taking that, developing it, and then reaching out to some of those areas where people have kind of felt alienated by this papacy, because there definitely are a lot of people, especially people, not just like, I hate to say just traditionalist, but like people who really care about like beauty in the liturgy, who care about like the truth of doctrine and thing, and want to like have debate and discussion and think pieces and podcasts and whatever it is, right? That's really like getting to what it is we believe as Catholics, you know? Yeah. But I think some of the best things to emphasize, like one of his favorite images is the road to Emmaus, right? Mm-hmm. And like in the road to Emmaus, the disciples have given up hope, right? These two disciples, and they're leaving the rest of the community. They're leaving Jerusalem. They're going in the wrong direction. So they're like actually incorrect, and right. Jesus doesn't like tell them, you idiots, you're incorrect, go back. Initially he just walks with them. Like he actually walks with them in the wrong direction, you know? So Pope Francis always highlights this, and it's actually through an experience of after Jesus has heard them out.
Yeah.
Then he starts to break open the word again. He's still not telling them, you know, like, you're wrong, you need to get your butt back to Jerusalem to evangelize. He's just like breaking open the word, revealing what was foretold in the prophets, revealing what he himself had said, still hasn't revealed himself to them fully.
Yeah.
Brings them to what we would call a sacrament.
Yeah.
The breaking of the bread reveals his identity to them. Mm-hmm. And then of their own volition, they're like, we've got to go.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like when Pope Francis talks about like who am I to judge? When he talks about, you know, walking pastorally alongside, you know, hot button issue, divorced and remarried Catholics, you know, sure. all this, yeah. Working with, you know, politicians who are, less than saints, yeah. so to speak, you know, he's,
Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I think that's where he's like, if I'm reading him charitably, it's like, yeah, these people may be incorrect. We're all incorrect in some way.
Yeah. Yep.
But we do need to accompany them, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's one of his favorite images. The other image that I will highlight that I think is, I've seen this play out on a more local level, is the field hospital church. He often talks about that.
Mm.
Like, less a church that people who are... who see themselves as perfect, who are, you know, are pristine, don't get their hands dirty, and that's where they go to hang out. It's more of a field hospital where people are coming and going, and they're broken, and tend to people as best they can.
There's some mega church pastor. I feel like every mega church pastor says a variation on this at one point, but the church is not a museum for saints. It's a hospital for sinners.
Yeah.
That's yeah. a lot. But that's basically it.
That's
same.
Basically
yeah,
it, what right?
Saying, right? Yeah.
And that can definitely be jarring. Like, even the work I do, which is a lot of outreach work, you know, in a downtown Catholic church, there is a lot of stuff that makes your eyebrows go up, and it's like, whoa, okay, like, what's happening here? What is this person? Why have they come here? And what's going on? You know,
mm-hmm.
It is a little messy, you know, and you kind of like, you break a few eggs, you break a few traditions here and there along the way.
Right.
And it's uncomfortable for sure. And I can see where some people, it's like, okay, but I do also
what
see
kind of traditions are you breaking? Like, someone's really hungry, so you got to feed them the communion wafers.
No, nothing that crazy. But I mean, like, again, I'm not talking about, like, capital T traditions, like, yeah, you know, 100 yeah. no, years. But even, like, oh, well, if you talk about feeding people, like, we feed people downtown, you know? And, like, I remember Mass was going on, and we're feeding people outside, and somebody comes in, you know, it's getting chilly outside, and somebody comes in to eat, and they're sitting at the back of the church, you know, and like Mass is going on, and we wanted to be a reverent space and whatnot. And I could totally like picture a few people in my mind who would be like upset that there's, because we don't do food and drink in the church, you know, that kind
right.
of normally, right? Especially while Mass is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this guy's sitting there, and I'm just like, there was this impulse in me that was like, yeah, I gotta almost like protect this guy. I got to just let him be, just let him,
right.
Let him eat there. We gave him the food outside at our outreach, you know, and like, he's not hurting anyone. And
sounds you know, like you need to build an addition onto St. Mary's, that dining hall.
Yeah. Well, we have the hall downstairs, and they've yeah. experimented with different things with having people sleep over and things. And yeah. there's, you know,
like, no, good, to make, I mean, good to for make you,
it,
Andrew.
Yeah, honestly. To make it like a literal field hospital, there's, yeah. you know, you still have to...
You have to put your money where your mouth
yeah,
is sometimes.
Yeah. But you do have to be conscious of yeah. people's safety and all that kind totally. Of stuff. And but there's little things like that that I think people, for better or for worse, can get attached to the way things always have been done, right? And
yeah.
then you look at like, well, the reality has changed. And like somebody needs the presence of the body of Christ. They need people there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to put aside my personal preference to like be there with that person, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that making sense?
That makes a lot of sense.
That's kind of, I feel like really that's beautiful. A more Pope Francis.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he wants to see.
And that's amazing. Cause I think it's true. Like I see both sides of it. Cause like a lot of people are hurt by legalism, and a lot of people are hurt by like, just a religion that is not patient with them. And that doesn't help them. Mm. If I'm going to weigh what is more likely going to win a lost soul back to Jesus, it is probably the patience rather than the brute force kind of truth, even if it, no matter how true, like the, it has to be led with the patience and with the open arms and with the welcoming. I think that Road to Emmaus imagery is very beautiful and very applicable. And so like, yeah, that's where it's like, I don't know. People always say that you get the Pope you need at the time. and probably Francis was needed after Benedict, and probably Benedict was needed for a season. And we're often not very gracious to the previous generations. But yeah, I guess there is always a part of me that just wonders that like is it time for a new voice that will be able to look back and take the good things from both Francis, Benedict, and John Paul II, and before him too. But like, who was the last Pope? I guess it was John Paul II. He would have been Pope till he actually died. Was he like in sound state of mind?
No. I think I'm pretty sure it was Parkinson's. I could be wrong about that, but he was pretty debilitated. And like, yeah, it's funny, like depending who you talk to, people interpret that differently. Like if they were a huge fan of John Paul II or whatever, they'll be like, wow, how like gracious that he, you know, what an example of the suffering servant and you know,
till the very end.
Right.
Yeah.
Others might say like, wow, that's like so
really, really held on for dear life there.
Also, or like how kind of awful that they would, you know, occasionally, I mean, when he was on his deathbed, he did very little, but they would still kind of bring him out for masses and things. And he was like, you know,
just not able.
It's like, but so I can see it both ways, but I think that again, as times change and you have such a hyper-sensationalist media focus, right?
Right.
It's like 24 hour feed. Like, what's the health of the Pope? How are they doing? There they were. Yeah. We've got every camera angle on this guy, you know? And it's not like 100 years ago or whatever, where it's like you'd get some report written by the secretary of the Vatican or whatever that's like, and this morning the Pope has retired to his chambers where he will be resting for the, as he prepares for the final journey to the, you know, whatever, right? It's sure. Like, it's a much more dignified way of saying he's going to die soon, right?
Yeah.
Rather than we have to see the guy there like drooling on the side of his chair or whatever, you know, like it's kind of rough, right? So I don't know. I'm not opposed actually to, if the Pope gets to a point, I don't think they should willy-nilly retire. I don't think we should have like six, you know, former popes, Pope Emeritus, just hanging out. But if the Pope gets to a point where he can't travel very well, he's in constant pain and discomfort, like, let's just let him have a little couple of years of retreat and, you know, peaceful life.
Yeah.
And,
Pope Francis, like, when it gets to be too much for him, I want him to be able to go back to Argentina and read Gutierrez or whatever Marxist theologians. I'm just kidding. I'm actually a lot more sympathetic to some of that stuff than some might suspect. But I think he should go be able to live a simple life at the end, because like there, you have a shelf life to, you know, you are only fit to lead for so much of your life, and especially something as like huge and important as the Catholic Church.
I can't even imagine, like, if you wake up in the morning as the Pope, like, how many things people must bring to you. Like, just the requests for visits to a country, you know? Like, it's a huge ordeal, right? They just announced, like, or revealed or whatever, that he came to Canada this past summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was his penitential pilgrimage for the history of residential schools, and
beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, he was here like a few days. He visited, I think, three different sites. You know, it doesn't solve everything, but it was a pretty impactful visit. But like, the thing cost the Canadian government alone like $50 million, you know, and it's like, And not even just the dollar figure, but like for that much, like think how much planning and everything goes into that and all that. So like you wake up in the morning as the Pope and you've got like all this stuff internally with the church and stuff. You've got bishops and stuff, people, all this stuff. What do we have to decide? Who's going to be working on this, that, the other? And then you've got to like decide, am I going to go to South Sudan next month or going to, you know, this stuff? Like it's, and so if you get to be in your 80s, and wheelchair bound and expected to do all of that like that, man, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
I had to go to Mexico and then to Europe within a 1 month span. That was too much for me. And I'm 28. Couldn't imagine being the Pope, that regimen. Oh, well, yeah, I guess, obviously Francis is going to leave a very unique and singular legacy.
The guy was listening to it at St. Jerome's talk. He was half jokingly, he said, you know, our first Jesuit Pope and possibly our last.
Did he have a reason? Like, as a funny joke, but did he have a reason for that?
Just because it's been such a surprise, you know, papacy.
Yeah.
People go, we better not risk it again.
Maybe in 1,000 more years.
We'll give it a bit, yeah. I don't know. I would kind of love if, you and I have watched The Young Pope, you know.
Oh, I love that show. I was thinking of rewatching it.
I think if there was like a, if they went with an American Pope, but regardless if they went African or Asian, if they went with somebody who was a little bit younger, who'd be there for like, you know, a good 20, 30 years, you know, kind of thing. I think that could be mixed cool. blessing. They could be crap for 20 years, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it'd be kind of neat if...
I guess you want someone who has had enough time to really show you who they are.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why they probably favor older popes, but yeah. It's a good point. In some sense, it's nice to know that, hey, if he sucks, we only have to deal with him for 10, 15
years. That's right,
years.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's a real disaster.
Which is weird, too, because, like, bishops and pastors are required to submit a resignation letter at age 75.
That seems about right.
Yeah, but the Pope doesn't. Like, it's weird. And, like, the American president right now is, like, 104. So, you know?
They'll let anybody do the job.
So priests will be able to continue serving, they just can't be like the actual pastor of a parish,
right.
Bishop's the same.
I knew a priest. He was a friend of my grandparents. He was a charismatic Catholic, and he died a couple or last year no 2 years ago no it was last year anyway he died recently and he's in heaven now, but he was 94 years old, but during the pandemic, like when nobody could go receive the Eucharist, he would like invite people over to his house and like hold a mass for them so that they could all
a clandestine have
the Eucharist. Yeah.
In defiance of the government.
And he could do it because he was a priest, a retired one, but a priest That's nonetheless. Hilarious.
And he was less accountable to the bishop then.
Exactly.
That's exactly. Hilarious.
Yeah. I loved that. Like he was clearly a bit of a rebel. That's the impression I got after I met him.
Well, I was just talking with a priest friend who is turning 75 this year, and he's a pastor right now. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, I had to, it was kind of, you know, it was a little sad. Like he was saying, I had to draft my letter and I've sent it, and I indicated in my letter, I still continue to serve, you know, so he's basically saying he would like to be made like you know, an assisting priest or something. He'd like to stay where he's at with his community, right?
But yeah.
But
they're gonna have to raise that age pretty soon if they don't get more enrollment in the priesthood. At least based on what you tell me.
Aging population. You hear the side notes, France was gonna raise the retirement age, you know?
Yeah, there's riots.
There's the riots.
No, nobody riots like the French.
Yeah.
Nobody does.
I'm just
civil
picturing
unrest.
Like a bunch of rioting priests who want their retirement.
Yeah.
They're tossing off the collars.
Yeah.
Smashing statues. That'd be awful.
That would be. Yeah. Especially like consecrated statues. Do you guys consecrate statues?
That's a great question. I don't actually know. Maybe they're... I don't know if the statues are actually consecrated.
I don't know. I was thinking about that. We really don't, like... In Protestantism, a lot of this stuff's so foreign to us because we just don't use it. We don't think anything physical is, like, can be inherently holy or blessed. Mm. We just don't have any, like, concept of that. Which I disagree with. Like, I think... Like, I'm the rare
Gnostics.
Protestant.
Is that Gnosticism?
No, I don't know. Gnosticism... I don't think I could summarize Gnosticism in one sentence, but I actually do believe that...
Dualism. Is it dualism?
I don't know. I believe that the Eucharist...
It's an ism.
I believe the Eucharist is Christ's body and blood. I've come to that belief.
Right on.
And I think like anointing oil. It's like if we do anointing oil, why don't we like do holy water?
One way... This is probably simplistic. I'm not a fully fledged trained theologian yet. But when I bring when school groups come to the church, you know, for tours,
yeah,
I go through kind of the etymology, right? So the words like sanctuary, sacred, you know, holy,
sure,
these are same roots, and we're talking about special or set apart, right? Like,
yeah,
quite literally, like set apart, like out of the ordinary, right? So, like, what does that mean? It means like on a whole bunch of levels, like how you think about it, how you approach it, how you talk about it, it's all set apart. It's all holy. It's all right. Mm. And so the whole idea of, you know, take off your shoes, you're on holy ground. Right?
Sure.
It's like, okay.
Yeah. A place can be holy.
Right.
Yeah.
And so to consecrate something,
mm-hmm,
is to make it set apart.
Yeah.
To set it apart, to make it holy. Right.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's often, I think, at least a little helpful for, you know, at least the root of, you know, we're going to consecrate bread and wine.
Right. What are they really saying?
We're going to consecrate a space. It means like, okay, everyone's going to, on one level, everyone's going to bow or bend the knee or something when they enter this space, right? Well, it's a holy space. You know, it's been consecrated. It's been set apart, right? And then you can think of like what the psychology of that, you can think of what the, you know, what it's going to mean over history, over time, for generations. It's like, oh, not only am I doing this, but many generations of my ancestors have done this here. So that adds a dimension to, you know, what makes that holy, what makes that set apart.
Well, like, 'cause that is a biblical thing too. Like, God tells a lot of people to mark a place because of what happened there, that this is holy ground. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff where it's just like, why would God have abandoned that idea of setting things apart as holy, just because the new covenant, like the new covenant doesn't change who God is.
Mm.
God's still, I have to, God didn't throw out consecration. God didn't throw out, there's another example that I thought of recently. I don't know. Yeah. Well, consecrations, I guess we'll have to leave it, 'cause I can't think of the other one. But, Andrew, I wanted to ask you before we go today, if you had to like rank your religious orders in the Catholic Church, what would be like your top three favorites?
Oh man.
Just to pick up on the joke that we started the episode with.
Yeah, you mentioned, the joke mentioned Franciscans, Dominican, no, Trappists.
Yeah, Dominicans and, or Franciscans, and then Jesuits.
And Jesuits.
Yeah.
To be honest, I only know a few Jesuits, like, I don't really know any Jesuits personally. My cousin is a member of an order called the Legion of Christ, Legionaries of Christ. And
what's their bit?
Well, in a nutshell, their whole idea, similar to the Society of Jesus, is the idea of kind of military in the sense of, you know, efficient and hardcore training to go and evangelize the world kind of thing.
Right.
They've had their own issues because they had a big scandal with their founder not too long ago. But they're in a lot of countries and they're doing a lot of work with schools and my, like my cousin leads a lot of like youth led missions and that sort of thing. So I kind of like what they're doing. But they're not my favorite. I just mentioned that because I know somebody who's actually a priest of their order.
Where does like Society of St. Pius?
You know who's really great on YouTube and elsewhere is Father Gregory Pyne. He's a Dominican.
Okay.
Super brilliant. Like just explains things in such a brilliant way. I think he's doing doctoral work right now in Switzerland, if I'm not mistaken. But he'll appear on like Pints with Aquinas with Matt Frad.
Yeah.
But just he's also really funny, has kind of a youthful energy to him. So I like him. He makes me really like Dominicans. Also, pastor who was at my parents' parish, who's now at my brother and sister's parish, he's a Dominican as well. So I know a couple. And I kind of like theirs. They're very studious. They're very, they're preachers, good preachers, well-read. Franciscans, I do really like Father Casey Cole, another YouTuber, who's very in the mold of Pope Francis, young, produces great content online, like just very adept with social media and YouTube. So Dominicans, Franciscans. My brother, community that he had studied with as a seminarian, is not actually an order. So this is like kind of cheating. It's a Society of Apostolic Life. That's just another technical designation. Companions of the Cross. They're the charismatics.
Holy Rollers.
The Holy Rollers. And then I work at a parish
they handle snakes.
That's Congregation of the Resurrection. And our alma mater, St. Jerome's, was...
Yeah.
Founded by the Congregation of the Resurrection, and they are working for the renewal of society. They die to self to rise a new life, and along the way to renew society through
that's
their
beautiful
engagement.
I
in
like
the world.
That.
So
I like that. That's
I kind cool. of like that spirituality. Just gotta stay away from those Jesuits, I guess.
Very good. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Stay away from the Jesuits. I think if I had to rank my top three Protestant denominations, I'd say the Anglicans would be in there. Remains to be seen how much longer. I have a soft spot for the Pentecostals, the old school Assemblies of God, just because that's what my grandparents were. And there are a lot of beautiful people who are on fire for the Lord in that denomination. And then number one, I'd say probably the Orthodox Church.
Oh, cool.
I'm just kidding. They're not Protestant.
What?
No, that was Orthodox friends. That was a low
blow. Well, that's a little different question, though. Denominations versus orders.
How do you really quick before we go, like,
yeah,
the Orthodox to you, like, how, what do you think of them?
I don't think of them. No. they're a bit of a mystery to me, but I like what I know of them. I like the beauty of their liturgy and their art. It feels to me to be very demanding spiritually in a good way.
Yeah.
It engages the faithful. It's very cultural.
You know,
it's very bound up in the cultures of
the East. That's the hard part about it.
You know? So it's a little foreign in that sense. But like one of my good friends who's part of the Eastern Church that's in communion with Rome, it gets a little confusing at
times.
Whole
thing.
He's a deacon, and just some of the stuff he's explained to me of like the prayers that go on with the with the priests getting ready, like vesting themselves and preparing the bread for the, you know, like all this stuff. Oh, and there's a lot that goes in that's all like behind the scenes that the people wouldn't even see, but it's like every detail has something to it.
Very mystical and spiritual. Yeah.
So I find them neat. And I like the singing, a lot of a cappella.
Oh, the singing's amazing. Yeah. I think they have the aesthetics down. I don't know. I some days I like them more. Some days I like the Catholics more. But yeah, a lot of beauty. I would really like to go to an Orthodox service sometime. Been to my fair share of masses, but that's a world I have yet to dip my toes into.
Yeah, divine liturgy.
Yeah,
yeah. We should go.
Yeah, I'd be down sometime. Yeah.
I hope in reflecting on this episode, there's no way we can do justice to the 10 years of Pope Francis's papacy so far. I hope if perchance I have offended, think but this and all is mended.
Well, hopefully the next, when we do his 20th anniversary episode,
that's right, yeah,
we'll have more to say. And
Holy Schism's 7,000th episode will be on his 20th anniversary. Yeah. But all in all, maybe concluding thought from me, at least on this, is just the culture is changing really rapidly, and the church is always trying to just navigate its way through that, you know? And we've made mistakes in the past. We're going to keep making mistakes. Pope Francis is at least trying to speak into that. I think that's my assessment of it. And I think he's doing a pretty good job.
You shall cross the barren desert, but you shall not die of thirst. You shall wander far in safety, though you do not know the way. You shall speak your words in foreign lands, and all will understand. You shall see the face of God and live. Be not afraid. I go before you always. Come, follow me, and I will give you rest.